Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Happy New Year, wonderful Hooverers. Oh, I hope it has been a happy new year so far, at least with regards to the things you've eaten up and that you've had some delicious things. As ever, it's my January mission to Hoover with some really bold, brilliant voices who will offer us a counterpoint, an alternative to the rest of the toxic world noise screaming at us that we can't be happy with our bodies just as they are right now. So today I'm hoovering with someone so brilliant who I've been meaning to ask for ages. It's fitness trainer and creator of book, journal and podcasts, all called Train Happy, Tally Rye. Thanks for being a listener to the old Hoovering podcast. Can you do me a favour and tell every other twat about this podcast? Cheers. One way of doing that is just to subscribe to it, and that saves you a bit of admin. It'll pop into your inbox every fortnight when a new one is released. Give it a 5-star review if you want. Apparently that helps other people find it too. Or just say, excuse me, other person, do you want to listen to the Hoovering podcast? That might work. I don't know. I haven't tried it. I'd be weird if I was trying it. That's why I need you to try it. If you want to support the podcast and are able to financially, that's an option. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. And thank you so much if you are my patron already. For 2022, I'm levelling up the guest recipes by including my own, or ones that I've had made for me in the last month, which I'll be taking real care and love over. It's my missus's famous pierogi, Polish dumplings, in this month's edition, for example. Also, there's discount tickets for my patrons, for example, to the upcoming Hoovering Live. I need to remind you about it. It's on the 5th of February at the Leicester Comedy Festival at 5:30 in the evening, or is it afternoon? I'm not going to get into an argument about that. It's already not expensive, and you're all so welcome. If you live anywhere near Leicester, come join us. I'll be revealing my swanky pants guests very soon. And last but best, some of my patrons get exclusive content, including the at least 6 months advance access to the Hoovering Fourth Birthday Party special episode, which I'm recording at the end of this month. Whoopa, don't miss out. The last thing to wang on about admin-wise is my stand-up. The world is still open, and if you're tested up and happy to be in that world, I'd love to have you come and see me at a gig. I'm doing a bunch of previews, work in progresses of what will one day be a new show called Wench. My favourite things to have you at would be the Honers Club, which is my new material night I run in Camden, or I'm doing some previews at the Bill Murray Comedy Club in Angel as well. There's a sprinkling of them on between now and the end of March, and they're always a gas, even if the material is pretty loosey-goosey. I think sometimes that's the most fun to be had of all, to be honest. Links to how to come to any of those things and everything else interesting that Tally and I mention in the podcast you're about to listen to are, as ever, in the podcast notes, wherever you got this podcast from. Finally, it's time to get into the actual podcast. Sorry. Tally and me met on the Zooms, as it felt like the most COVID-sensible thing to do at the time of recording, and for lunch, we both had our own takes on the brief was soup, crusty bread and cheese. That was the intention anyway. Nom 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 nom, I made myself a goodie. Thank you for doing my silly podcast.
Thank you for having me. This is the most fun podcast I've ever done, and we haven't even done it yet.
Yeah! What, because we get to eat some lunch in it?
Yeah, just the concept. The concept is great. I love it.
And
I've got my whole plate of goodies here. I'm waiting.
Oh my, please! You've waited. Oh look, what's yeah. you? Okay. Can you talk me through it?
Yes. Please. So, soup selection. I'm usually a bit of a soup snob, but okay. My boyfriend's favorite one and only soup is Heinz tomato soup, and.
Brilliant.
He can't beat it. He cannot beat it. And I had to ask him, but can I have one of the cans? Because that's what I'm craving today.
Fine.
I've got crusty white bread. Has to be that, doesn't it, with soup?
Yeah.
Buttered. Yeah. And then the leftover cheese from Christmas. So I've got, because prior to Christmas, I had to potentially, we didn't know if we were going to make it home for Christmas. No one did they?
No one
COVID
did.
And everything.
No one did.
Well, I started getting my cheese selection in, but didn't end up using any of it. So I've got it all to eat in January.
Course.
So I've got the Stilton and apricot, and it's with amaretto for Christmas. And then just amazing. A really, I lied. It's a Wensleydale one, and then this is a Stilton.
Okay.
So just a few bits left over.
Do you like a fruity cheese then, an apricot cheese?
I do.
It's probably, my mum really loves a fruity cheese. My missus really loves a fruity cheese. And I think maybe I'm such a salt tooth that I really like. I like those. I like the ones that like, not the ones that smell like someone's died, but the ones or like that someone's like, just sort of been left in the back of a car for 8 years.
Like smelly
years,
feet.
And that, yeah.
Yeah.
I like at the moment, like cheese wise, I like the ones that hurt. I like the ones that are so strong that they hurt, or like burn a bit off, or like feel like they've almost like made of knives.
Potent.
Yeah, really like powerful, tangy, blue or crystally. Yeah, the ones that sort of really, sort of bit of an internal, a bit of a wake up call, bit of a swim on a New Year's Day swim in the sea level of slap around the face. Cheese. But I feel gutted because I can't match you on any cheeses because none was left over.
Wow.
And we weren't even here for Christmas. We've just in the betwixtmas. We have demolished it all.
Fair enough.
And the only cheese that's left is a bit of brie that's being turned into a brie and cranberry tart for my dinner later.
So I'll save it then.
That. Yeah.
No, I can't save that.
That.
That sounds great.
I love a bit of, I do love a tin, I was going to have a tinned soup. And then I realised once my veg boxed arrive, box, not veg boxed, it's not a box set. Once my veg box arrives, which I don't know what is coming in it. Sometimes I look, sometimes I don't. I like the surprise. I had three different items, two squashes and one pumpkin.
Oh.
And so I thought, if you don't make your own soup, something's gone awry. So I've made, it's not very pretty, but
it tastes so good, I bet.
It's so good. It's from Nigel Slater's
orange book that I think's called Autumn Winter in a very snazzy way, which I've only made one recipe from that I didn't love. Everything in it else I've made has been really bloody delish. But it's just butternut squash and veg stock whizzed up. But then just at the end, you add tahini. If you can be asked and have got the stuff, chop up some rosemary and sesame seeds. And he says hazelnuts, but I didn't have any, so I've used... he said chestnuts. I didn't have any. He used hazelnuts. And fry them and then put them on the top and then stir them in. So actually it feels a bit swanky pants. And then, yeah.
Well, that feels a little bit nicer than my Heinz tomato soup.
I love a Heinz tomato soup.
Oh, you've got to have both.
I think sometimes with a hangover, my body screams at me for some Heinz tomato soup because it's almost equivalent of like a rehydration tablet, isn't it? All the sort of salts and sugars in there, bloody delish. Right, let's get into it. Thank you for your Instagram, generally.
Thank you.
It's such a joyful place to be, a virtual place to be. I think calling it a safe place to be makes it sound not as exciting as it is. It's also really exciting and inspirational, and I think there's things on it that have been revelatory for me. You're a fitness trainer, and I guess lots of people will be looking to the new year in sort of ways that are positive, and in whatever your motivation. Lots of people in the new year start thinking about moving their body more, don't they? And you preach intuitive exercise. Now, I would love, please, you to talk me through a layperson's guide to what that is, and explain for me if it's anything to do with my old friend intuitive eating. I'm assuming it is.
It is the very close relative of intuitive eating. So if you know intuitive eating...
I know her.
So for those who don't know intuitive eating is a framework of 10 principles to help you basically heal your relationship with food and just sort of really dissect and analyze and kind of rebuild a really peaceful relationship with food, because so many of us, it gets really complicated and messy with all these messages from diet culture and just especially this time of year.
The noise is loud.
And so intuitive eating is definitely a close friend of mine.
Yes.
But I felt that as a trainer, and the big part of my own journey, and one that I have seen time and time again from people who follow me, who I've worked with, is that their relationship with exercise can be just as messy and complicated as their relationship with food.
Fuck yeah.
And that they're so intertwined that it's really important that we have the same kind of ability to, like I say, assess, dissect, question, reevaluate our relationship with exercise. And so I wrote about intuitive movement in my first book, Train Happy. And if you know the principles of intuitive eating, you've got 10. This has 9.
Okay. Well, it's one less principle.
Well, one less principle, because one of the principles of intuitive eating is joyful movement. So we've we've taken a principle of joyful movement and broken that down.
Nice.
But you'll see a nice mirror between intuitive eating and intuitive movement. And both these, and the intuitive movement specifically, like I say, is designed to just really help you think about the influences you've had on your relationship with exercise. Like, why do you feel like you have to go to the gym for an hour? Yeah. Where did that rule come from?
Yeah.
And why are you feeling that pressure? And then in another way, it helps you really figure out what you actually enjoy doing and how your body feels when it wants to move and how your body feels when it wants to rest. Yeah. And so it's a process of, like I say, rebuilding that relationship with exercise, but that is filled with trust and connection, because the thing that, you know, chronic dieting and feeling bad about yourself and constantly outsourcing to diet clubs or trainers and plans and regimes and whatever else, is that you often don't know yourself. And I don't know if that's been your experience.
Yeah, 100%.
But you're like, wait a second, what do I like? I thought I had to do, you know, at least... 45-minute HIIT workout because that's what someone told me was going to get me the best results. But, you know, what do you actually like? And I think that's really important to get people questioning that and figuring out. for themselves.
Totally. Amazing and a brilliant answer. It's definitely been my experience. And I think the honest answer is I feel nothing but short of rage now every time I see even a very well-intended, inclusive-looking government advert encouraging people to move, where ultimately, you know, it's goal-motivated is the kindest way of putting it. It will be transformation-motivated. It will be 99% of the time weight loss-motivated. I think after the lockdowns, the government invested lots of money in these kind of adverts. So we were hearing it from, you know, arguably what's meant to be some of our most trusted sources. It makes me rage because actually for 30-something years, I suppose at school I enjoyed moving my body in team sports. I was lucky that I had that nice background with movement. But I would think of it as being, even then, like I remember there was probably a time during sixth form where me and a few mates would go and play badminton at some lunchtimes and we'd have such a laugh and we were all sort of similar, you know, similar level at it, you know, kind of passable, but we really had a giggle, even though I'd enjoy it so much. I'd come away from it and think, oh, I've kind of got really sweaty there without even realizing it was happening.
Yeah.
And I'd think, great, I deserve my lunch. And actually even that was pretty toxic, actually. And it's probably why no part of me ever went, oh, I'm going to carve a bit of my day out to go and do that thing I love. Like, I never went on to join a badminton club, even though it's a thing I love, because my relationship with it was, well, how much weight is it going to lose me? How's it going to change what I look like? And I just didn't care about things making me feel good. That wasn't my narrative. And it meant I never, ever... oh God, carried on with, like, well, that's the wrong way of putting it as well. I never built a nice relationship with exercise, and everything I did was faddy. I'd believe in ridiculous curses. Like, I thought, well, as soon as I spent money on something, that's when I stopped doing it. And then that I'd fall into that narrative.
Yeah.
And I had this odd thing where every now and again, part of my latest fad would involve being in the gym, which not all my exercise fads did. I'd have a little go on the weights bit and be like, God, this is fun. Better get back on the treadmill. and where I'm just feeling shame and failure and misery. Like, it was so ridiculous that it took me into my 30s to be like, why don't you just do the bit you loved? Like, what is it you're aiming to get here? But I believed all the bullshit that, well, I don't want to get too muscly. I don't want to get too unfeminine. Okay. As if, like, unless you're... And now, you know, I'm like, yes, please, may I get more muscly? Like, it was a re-education on so many levels. But that's not to say, I feel like I talk about weightlifting so much because that's the thing I found that I feel such joy in and I want to turn up for. And it's become a friend, you know, although I still am deeply imperfect and we'll move on to other questions about things I've learned from you and your brilliant writing. But I feel like I wang on about weightlifting so much that I worry sometimes that people listening might think, well, I've tried that and I didn't like that. And you're like, fine, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Like, they've been, you know, there's historically, there've been other types of movement I've loved, but I've ruined by bringing my toxic baggage to. I loved swimming, but then I got to a point where I was like, well, actually, unless I'm swimming for 2 hours, it's not doing anything. Like, ugh, I ruined it. I ruined it by wanting it to make me thin, by thinking that being thin would mean being happy. It just...
And I feel like you're blaming yourself with that. And
yeah.
You shouldn't be blaming yourself because we are just human beings absorbing all these external messages to us. They are not necessarily your original thoughts or ideas. Yeah. Like, take the pressure off yourself and just, like, don't beat yourself up over it. Because even like you were saying, you know, even at school, starting to feel like, well, I earned lunch now. Like, that messaging runs so deep for so many people. Yeah. And we get it from childhood, from, you know, sadly, through school, through our parents, who are also sort of victims of diet culture as well. Like, you know what I mean? No one's safe. No one is safe. And this pervasive message that when you're thinner, you're going to be successful, happy, loved, you know, finally, you know, yeah. find your purpose in the world, I think is sadly untrue. And yeah. I say this as someone who definitely got thinner as well. And yeah. only, and I could say there was part of me that felt like, yeah, I did it. Wow. Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of praise and
the world and you really get a lot of validation. Well, yeah.
You get a lot of validation, but I don't know about you, but my God, the fear of losing that.
Yeah.
Actually, and I don't know, I've never been more focused on what I look like than when yeah. I was actually at my smallest, which yeah. you think would be ironic because you think you would just be like, oh, cool, I did it. I'm great. Like, I've got nothing to worry about.
Meant to be that you get to that point and then
you like don't care anymore. Yeah. But no, you don't.
No one tells you you have to be on the diet forever.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You get to the ribbon at the end of the race. But then what no one tells you is that you just have to keep running against the tension of that ribbon that starts cutting into you because, like, you're like, hang on, this wasn't the fucking deal.
Mm.
And these things are designed to fail. They're not designed to be ways to live forever. And, I mean, I'm sure there's some fucking jockeys and actors managing it, but it's not a life I want.
But then there's like so many layers of, like, privilege to that and body, you know, genetics and... Yeah. You know, access to whatever they have. So that, I mean, that's like a whole thing where we can just like take the pressure off ourselves for that. Yeah. And then, like you say, adding that pressure, this is my biggest gripe with how fitness has been portrayed through the diet culture lens for so long, is that whatever you do, whatever the activity is, swimming, dancing, even, you know, whatever it is, that if it has to have a visible result to be worthy. And it's like your body knows, right?
Yeah.
Like your lungs aren't benefiting and your muscles aren't benefiting. Yeah. Like your mental health isn't benefiting without you dropping a number on the scale.
Yeah.
Like it's all the benefits are internal and the fact that we're so obsessed with the external is just so frustrating. But that's, like I say, that's been like a way that diet culture has, you know, and these diet companies and, you know, have become very overlapped with the fitness world and how they market and, because there's money to be made and, you know, if they can create an insecurity within you and then sell you the supposed solution, they're going to do their best to profit.
Yum in my tum.
I have to really keep an eye on my relationship with exercise as much as I do with my relationship with eating. So I am... I would have bored the listeners on this podcast with this, but like essentially like a really potted history with flirting with all types of disordered eating, but mainly just a sort of adult life, well, from age 9 lifetime of being in cycles of diet attempts, diets, successes, cycles of starvation followed by binging, sometimes purging. And then eventually realising over time that and a therapist... diagnosing me effectively with binge eating disorder and then working through that in therapy. And I think as a result, and then also just a re-education from the brilliant world of the founders of intuitive eating, etc. I then had like a long journey that's been charted over the course of doing this podcast with making my peace with my relationship with eating, having just a rebirth, like this incredible, like freeing, just the most amazing freedom from all of those constrictions. And I think, I don't know, you're probably not never cured. Like I can feel in times of, when really hard times, I hear a voice say to me, and in the way that other people have a voice that says to them, have some alcohol or have some drugs or have some sex you don't really want or have some... whatever. Whatever the thing the person is has to use to numb their emotions, I hear a voice still sometimes that goes, eat absolutely loads and don't even taste it. I have a voice that's like, just eat. And now I can hear it and I can choose whether or not I listen to it. And if I do listen to it, I can do that without feeling all the complicated things I used to feel with that, all the shame and all the negativity and all the like, well, I better starve as a result of that, blah, blah, blah. So... what's interesting is I've come so far with that that now I feel like I'm just starting to keep an eye on my relationship with exercise. Whereas before I was like, let that be, let that flourish. Mm. You found this thing that you love. But also now I have to keep my eye on the fact that the thing that I love is also kind of a bit addictive. I would find it very easy to, I don't know, the things you were listing, sometimes I think, yeah, I do panic about getting ill and not being able to train. Mm. I do panic about setting a goal and then being annoyed with myself if I haven't achieved that new PB with that particular lift. Or I find the juggle very hard there, because I want to be ambitious. I want to challenge my body in doing the thing that I love. I want to do like prideless things, like enter competitions that are open entry, even if I don't care if I'm going to come last. I want to do those things. But equally, I definitely need to be better at not being so goals focused. Like, I have learned not to be very goals focused with my work. So I don't know why I'm allowing myself to do it with my exercise. Is part of intuitive movement perhaps being a bit less goals focused?
It can be, and it might need to be for the person. Yeah. It's so individual. And I think, so you know about unconditional permission to eat with intuitive eating, which is the kind of idea of going like, no food is good or bad. And no matter what I do, you know, I am worthy and allowed to eat what feels right for me and what satisfies me and all of that.
Yeah.
And I think in intuitive movement, I call it unconditional permission to rest.
Mm.
Because I think so many people, this is where we can kind of get lines can get blurred, is with that rest bit.
Yeah.
And how we learn
to lose all my gains, all of that fear.
How we learn to overcome that fear. And I really believe a lot of overcoming that fear is in the doing and essentially the not doing. Yeah. So that fear of taking a rest day and losing your gains, take it. What happens?
Yeah.
Write it down. Talk about, like, write it. In my latest, I came up with the Train Happy Journal just before Christmas.
Yeah.
And within that, in one of, you know, a lot of the tasks within that are saying, like, how does it feel to have that rest day? Like, what came up for you and what was it about? And I think it's so, I love that you have made the link, and I think a lot of us need to make the link between these old coping mechanisms kicking in and other emotional stuff going on in our lives. Like, they are so intertwined. And I think that also comes up with resting.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, a lot of what we're doing is numbing or distracting or keeping ourselves busy from actually just like sitting and, you know, being and feeling and just being human, really.
Yeah.
And so we're like, how can we distract ourselves? I know, I'll work out every day because then I don't have to feel it. And it's not to say, and this is on a sort of tangent of saying, when people say, you know, exercise is my therapy, I like to get really specific about that and say, no, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Because it's...
I love that.
It's therapeutic.
It's, it's actually your therapy. That's your therapy.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, food is medicine. It's like, no, your medicine is your medicine.
And food can help. And it's the same thing. It's like exercise can help. Definitely help you manage your symptoms when you approach it in the right way.
Yeah.
And sometimes a lot of us who say exercise is my therapy are, you know, literally running away, you know, metaphorically and literally running away from actually dealing with the shit, right? Yeah. So what we need to do is not fall into the trap of going like, it's fine, I work out, like everything's rosy, I'm all good. It's like I say, giving yourself that unconditional permission to rest so that when unexpected rest is required, whether it be through injury, through illness or whatever, it doesn't like throw you into a tailspin. And at the same time, sometimes you almost need to like approach these events and for these things to happen for you to know you can get through them.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of prepare yourself and definitely work on it, but a lot of it happens in the doing. Yeah. And both with intuitive movement and intuitive eating, and I mean anything in therapy, like when something comes up and you feel like, oh, maybe I did go back into old habits or old thought patterns and stuff, that's not like you're a bad person for doing that. That's not that at all. It's just like those are the old coping mechanisms you had.
Yeah, like, and you kind of got to go, I've clocked it, I've noticed it.
Exactly. exactly.
And then,
oh, that's okay. Interesting. Be curious yeah. about it. Like,
curious why did, about it.
Why
yes.
am I? Why am I doing that? And I think that's one of the best things we can do is just be curious rather than be, you know, judgmental of ourselves.
100%. Oh, glorious. I sometimes really struggle to differentiate between movement from ego versus movement from intuition. Can we get into that? Like, I worry that my motivations when I know what my motivations are. For example, if I post something on Instagram, a PE thing, you know, a movement of some sort on Instagram, I worry my motivations. There's got to be some ego in that motivation. Even if in my mind I'm going, well, I'm not being very articulate, Tally.
I feel like I know what you're getting at.
Podcast for a long time, but I'm so shit at saying what I mean.
Oh my, don't worry about
listening.
It.
How is anybody still listening? Fuck me. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much for still listening. What I mean is, for a long time, I never put me doing any PE things on the internet. I never put anything on my Instagram. In my mind, my justification was, I'm a comedian. I should just put funny things on there and nothing else.
Yeah.
Even though this is something that's a huge, increasingly huge part of my life. I absolutely love it to bits where, you know, apart from food, where the other half of my spare money goes, I think about it all the time. I enjoy planning, you know, things to do with it. I like, you know, the equipment that comes with it. I'm in it, but I'm not putting anything online. And then I had a word with myself about the fact that I don't like filming myself as I don't like watching myself. Mm-hmm. And I was having that conversation with myself because ultimately it was holding me back because I'm not checking my technique on things, on my form on things. And, you know, I sometimes was training with coaches who I couldn't physically be with for whatever reason. And they're like, look, if I can't see it, the lift didn't happen. And how can I tell you anything to help you if you won't film it? So I got over that and I was filming things for me to send to them and for me to watch back. And I was sometimes watching things back and go, God, I feel really proud of myself, especially if I was working towards something that didn't come very naturally to me at all, that took years of pootling away at, like handstand or gymnastic-y things for me don't come naturally at all. But I've got this kind of prideless woman in her late 30s joy at having a go at this shit. And I was looking at these videos and I was thinking, why wouldn't I put them online? And it's because I'm embarrassed of my body, or I don't want to watch my body doing that. And because I resolved that, here's my motivation is going, no, I'm over it. I'm going to stick it online. Surely it's good for me to be like, this is what a 38-year-old woman who is not I don't know how to describe it. I'm quite heavy. Looks like upside down with my t-shirt like riding up a bit, you know, and you're like, I don't mind it. So in my head, I'm like, that's a positive thing to put out into the world. And then every now and again, I think, but there's still some ego in that. I'm still looking for strangers to be like, oh my God, well done. But my worst fear is that it's like, anyone would think I'm trying to be their fitspiration. Because I think, I don't know, some of that can also be really harmful, can't it, in the world? I don't know. I don't want anyone to think it's a PE equivalent of a before and after picture is my point. I'm not trying to change my body physically to look at.
Yeah, and I think it's obviously sounds like you've gone on this sort of journey of really trying to not objectify yourself when you're exercising, right?
Yes.
And to get out of that self-objectification mindset of like, how does everyone else perceive what I look like?
Yeah.
How do I perceive what I look like? What is everyone else thinking about me whilst I'm doing this exercise? And so that is definitely a huge part of that like body acceptance piece. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to put a video of you doing your exercise online. And I think it's quite cool that you're able to go like, part of me is like my ego and I want to, you know, I do like a bit of the validation of saying like go you, well like done. That's really cool.
yeah
and I get that, like, hello, I have
sick to admit it if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, but I've been running a social media account for like the last 8 years. If there's not part of me that just wants, you know, external validation from strangers, then I can join the club.
No one became a stand-up comedian because they were fine with a normal amount of appreciation from strangers, did they?
Yeah, exactly.
I've got to show off my daddy issues somewhere, come on.
Yeah, I mean, my past life, I wanted to be a musical theatre performer, so it's
did
all
you?
Yeah,
Amazing.
I went to drama school, but
amazing.
So it's all in the soup of loving the praise of strangers.
I think that sort of ego versus intuition thing in terms of movement, though. About 8 years, so I didn't give
no, but I think it was really important to talk about that part. And then I think when it comes to the ego and intuition bit, and the bit I kind of talk about is when we are working out for how we want other to perceive what we're doing. So, for example, like you going, I'm really tired, but there's loads of people in the gym, and if I don't lift the heaviest weight I can possibly do, then people are going to think I'm rubbish. And it's you going, do you know what? Today, I'm going to do a really low weight workout because the amount I lift does not define me and does not define my worth as a person.
God, I feel so seen.
And I can just do whatever I want. I can just do whatever I want if that feels right for me today. Mm-hmm. And just letting go of needing to please the other people in the gym, the people online. It's your workout, your body. You do what's right for it. And like, I notice this if I have been in a class. So I'm a spin instructor and we do instructor training where all the instructors get together and we like each teach each other stuff. So you can imagine the egos in the room is like
crumbs.
Wild because everyone's there, especially in fitness. There's a whole like thing with fitness trainers where we want people to think we're good at our job because you are intimidated or nervous about what the way we're going to teach all the exercises we're going to give you because it's so hard and so brutal and so, you know, hardcore that like that's what makes you a good instructor, which I disagree with.
I'd have joined the army if I wanted to be coached like that.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, that's
the vibe.
The old narrative within fitness, and it's still very much there. So going to these group, you know, training classes, everyone is, you know, trying to fight for their lives and go as hard as they can and get their gears up and sprint as fast as they can and all the rest of it. And often I just like sit back. If I'm having a moment of like, oh, this is a bit too much for me, I just sit back and just pedal at my own pace for a little bit or take the gears down or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people be like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm absolutely fine. I'm just doing what's right for me in this moment. Yeah. And, you know, previously I would have very much done everything in my power to keep up at the detriment of myself. You know, I would have ended up like crawling out the room had it meant that everyone thought I was the fittest one there. But I don't care anymore. I don't need to be the fittest person. I don't need to be the strongest person. I know the value I bring to this, you know, this class, this as an instructor. Like, I don't need people to think that I'm like, you know, fittest woman in the world, which I think is this narrative that a lot of instructors feel. And I think a lot of people feel, you know, who are just going to the gym or going to these classes. I mean, even in a spin class, looking at the people next to you, you're like, oh, I need them to think that I'm really fast and like I can keep up with everything. And if I sit down for a moment and have a drink, then everyone's going to judge me. When I just think we need to let go of that. And that's letting go of the ego. That's going like, I'm going to do what's best for me. Doesn't matter what else is going on in the room. I'm doing my thing.
Oh God, it's so spot on, you know. One of the reasons I love my gym is because it's run by women and which I think always helps a bit.
Mm.
Sorry, hashtag not all male fitness people.
but a lot of them.
But it's run by women and one of the parts of their ethos is really like, you're only in a race with yourself.
Mm.
Like you are... You must scale. You just pace yourself, you know. And there's lots of like great tips. They're like, choose your, like, you can set yourself like a, choose when you're going to rest, like after however many reps. Like, doesn't matter what he's doing next to you or what she's doing next to you. There's no mirrors.
Yeah.
You're just on a journey with yourself. And it's so spot on. And there's one new coach that's just not down with the ethos of all the other coaches. And it's so fascinating watching so many of us basically put our hand up and go, excuse me,
side-eyeing, like, wait, this isn't how it's going to be done.
This coach has made us all put our rowers next to each other in a line. So that you've got no choice during that part of the workout but to look at the pace of the people either side of you and go, oh, well, she's really tall. And he's like, oh, I mean, they're going twice the... Oh, right. Really demoralising and doing the whole kind of like, that person's just done three times as many rounds as you. How are you feeling? It's like,
No.
Like, that's the opposite of what I do when I'm here, dude. You don't know what I'm doing. You don't know where I'm at in my hormonal cycle. You don't know how much sleep I had last night. You don't know if my son woke up at 2 a.m. because he thought he'd pissed himself, even though he hadn't actually. So I was like, just wanted to cuddle because it's a weird dream. You know, like, you've got no idea. You don't. I was stressed about a family illness. You don't know nothing about my day. Get your beak out of my face and let me get back into the race I was in with only myself. Thank you very much, new boy.
Well, I think you're so right on to say that. And if anyone's in that situation where, you know, I get this a lot, like someone told me that, you got a message yesterday saying, oh, I went to the gym and one of the guys there told me that I gained weight.
Oh,
and I was
fuck
like,
off. Get fucked.
What the
is that
hell?
Helpful?
Like,
is that helpful?
Yes. Well, my thing was like, what the fuck? That was my response.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you say, and I do think there is this like narrative within fitness that's very like, no excuses. It's like you against you, but it's like only you can change your life and blah, blah, blah.
It's so funny, isn't it? You've got to hope that we one day get to a world where, well, ideally, where no one's coming up and commenting on the size or weight of anybody's body. That's the end game. The interim game, surely, if someone goes, you've gained weight, is to be like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
I've been working so hard. I've had chocolate for breakfast for 3 weeks and I have had the fucking best time. And thank you, actually. Hard work pays off.
Yeah, just being like, I've been so dedicated. I've been like, this, yeah, whatever. But yeah, I just think like, if you don't want it to be like that, you've got to ask for it and say, and give feedback. And whether it's not necessarily direct eye-to-eye feedback, which I know that I'm a bit of a coward and I wouldn't do.
No, I did a pissy email to her.
Perfect.
I did it while I was still annoyed.
Yeah.
And I sent a very huffy email.
Perfect. I think send an email. Yeah. I even, in my first book, Train Happy, I even like put a little template in there of something you could say. You know, if you are experiencing these things, let them know because, you know, as with anything, the customer is always right. Yeah. And if you're customer and you're not happy, go and complain. This is the only time it's acceptable to be a Karen.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. This has been so fun.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Talk to me about eating when you were growing up as a child. Any particularly strong memories? Did you grow up, were you in a household where food was being cooked for you by one particular person? Any siblings? Any fussiness?
Well, I definitely had the benefit of my mum's cooking. She was a great cook. My mum actually loved to cook because she went to be an au pair when she was like 16, 17 in Germany. So she loved to cook a lot of like German things. So we had a lot of those sorts of recipes growing up.
I had an Austrian nana. I wonder if we had some similar things.
Yeah. And so that was always, you know, I felt really lucky with that. And my grandma as well, my mum's mum, good cook, but great baker.
Yes.
But she basically had two recipes and that's basically all we had our whole childhood.
Okay,
it's called just grandma's chocolate cake, which I still make now. Like if I'm, and I tell you what, And the other thing is this lemon drizzle cake that Grandma made. Oh. They're both like from a WI book from like the 50s. And I've literally got pictures of the original recipes because I love, like, that we have all grown up on them. I think my mum, you know, my uncle, all us three children, my brother and sister.
What a special
they thing. Made us. That cake made us who we are. And, you know, that chocolate cake in particular has been such a comfort during COVID, early COVID, and like especially just in 2020 in general. I really found myself craving a lot of my childhood foods. I don't know if you've had that. I just big suddenly time. Started just eating a lot of like sandwiches I used to make, or buying snacks I used to have, and certain things, because I needed that comfort and security. And you know, when people say like, oh, food is just fuel, like it's not. It can be it's so much more than that. And for me, it's so about, it was really about like soothing that inner child in me that was like, I'm freaking out over what's going on. Yeah. I know, I'll eat grandma's chocolate cake. So I made quite a few batches of grandma's chocolate cake, you know, opposed to the banana bread, which I did also make, but the chocolate cake,
the old bananas,
exactly, but the chocolate cake really got us through. So that is a definite childhood highlight for me. And then I suppose growing up in my teens, sort of learning to cook quite early on, because both my parents worked, and it was like, if you want to get fed, you gotta feed yourself. You know, that time between getting home from school and my mum getting home and dinner being about like 7:30, we were ravenous. So my sister and I started to make food for ourselves. And then, do you want to hear one of the weirdest food combinations ever that my brother got really into?
Of course I do.
So he got into making circle sandwiches, which he'd... Okay. But wait till you hear the filling. So not only would he would get like 2 pieces of bread.
Yeah.
Nutella.
Okay.
Roast beef slice.
Oh, fuck.
Normal, right? And then you'd have another slice of bread. And then you'd cut it out with a can, so it was a circle. And he called them his circle sandwiches, and that's one thing he liked. And you know, I'll never. Yeah, I think even just to this day, he would try
beef.
Yeah, just standard food combinations. I mean, Nigel Slater, eat your heart out, right?
And how's he getting on now?
Well,
I'd love it if he was like chef.
No, he is not. But
does he have a creative job?
No, do you know what he does do at the moment? He is an extra in movies and TV.
That's pretty creative. I thought
pretty creative, pretty random. No, my brother's a pretty quirky person, and that's cool. That was very evident in his food choices. Okay. But that's one thing from my childhood I'll never forget, him eating.
Did you ever taste it?
No, goodness no. Like, absolutely not.
What are you thinking?
No. Yeah. Controversially, not even a big fan of Nutella, which I know is controversial, but I think that's because I was surrounded by, you know, beef and Nutella sandwiches.
Yeah, that's the one way to put someone off Nutella, I think. Pop it next to a slice of beef. What? They're both brown. You can see his logic, can't you?
And I think he probably had brown bread as well. So it's just like brown sandwiches.
Oh, I love it. I'll eat a rainbow of brown, 50 shades of brown.
Yeah.
Delish. It's so funny, isn't it? How kids, I think they are like, my son is keen sometimes to try the wonkiest combinations of things, but nothing has been that intense. Nothing has been... It might be one of the most intensely bizarre combinations I've ever heard on this podcast.
I thought it would
4 years old. That is,
I thought I could bring that to the table today.
You have, and I've really fucking loved it. Are there any foods or drinks that you hate or love that most people do the opposite?
Oh, I'm not a fussy eater in general. I say Nutella's one of them. I can basically eat anything, but do I like it particularly? No, not a massive Nutella fan. Would never choose it myself.
It's people are absolutely bonkers for Biscoff at the moment.
Yeah.
And it used to be Nutella, didn't it? I have a group of friends that I've had since first school. And when we occasionally, it's increasingly... I'd love to have a holiday with them soon. It's been too long. Whenever we occasionally have a holiday all together, it's often somewhere in Europe where you can get Nutella in a whole different size of jar.
It's
an adult head.
Yeah.
It's part of the holiday ritual, even if it's a beachside holiday, to get one of those and to just sort of chip away as a team, teaspooned in hand. You don't spread it on anything. It calls itself a spread, but it's, I believe, meant to be devoured
by the spoonful.
Teaspoon in. Yeah, twist out. And then you treat that as a
like a lollipop.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
My partner and my brother and sister would also join you doing that. Yeah. Like just me being like, not so sure. But I like chocolate hazelnut things, but just not that thing. Yeah, another one I don't love quite so much is meringue. I'll tell you what.
I'm not that fussed.
And the other one I do stay clear of, marshmallows. Can't do it.
Couldn't give a shit.
The texture, the excitement
on my partner and son's faces when the option is there to toast a marshmallow over some kind of naked flame.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never seen two happier people. I get the idea of it. I think that I like the look of it all burny over the all melty burny. And then, no.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that either. I'm with you on that. I fully get it. It's like it's too...
It's just gooey. It's gooey and sickly and it's just too much. But the irony is I do have a sweet tooth in general. Like I do love, you know, I'm always a dessert person. If it's starter, main dessert, always a main
Are you?
Person. Yeah.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
I'm having another starter for pudding.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So,
are you on the cheese course?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want that as well, really. Yeah. But yeah. Brilliant. Oh, God, that's so interesting to know. I would take a meringue over a marshmallow any day. I don't know what it is that pisses me off about marshmallows so much. Pisses me off is wrong. They don't annoy me. I can understand why the people love them. It's the dustiness for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll take the gooiness. It's the dustiness. It's that, like, slightly arid. It's like I don't want a sugary, some sort of like, small, sugary oat cake.
And then you get that fluff spread, which is essentially like, have you seen it? It's like a jar of marshmallow spread. No,
I haven't.
Thank you.
No, not fast.
But brother who loves the beef and chocolate spread sandwiches all over it, which explains
all
a lot. All over it.
And I tell you what doesn't make sense. Candy floss. Yeah. All day, all night. I'll eat that.
I can eat that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can eat that.
Yeah. Yes. It's a delicious cloud on a stick. Mm. Yeah. Anyway. Have you ever accidentally eaten anything that's not food?
Oh, well, I do remember playing as a child and eating, like, willingly eating soil. And I feel like all children do that at some point. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah. I'm worried I did it a bit too old, actually. I think I did that during my student days.
Oh.
In a bad way of a late night, but not as a child. But it's a common thing, isn't
it? Yeah. You know, mud kitchen and make yourself all of that. Yeah. I did enjoy that.
I did enjoy that.
She says through a grimace.
Do you believe there's any food that demands to be eaten in a particularly ritualistic way? The classic example, people, is like Cadbury's Cream Egg. They did a whole marketing campaign, didn't they, on it back
in the day,
about how do you eat yours? But is there anything that you're like, you do this first and then you do that and then you have that bit and then...
Well, I feel I'm not too... anal about those things, but I do feel like I could be that way about Kinder Bueno. You know,
it's a great choice of a thing to be that way about because it's so structurally fascinating.
It is, and you're able to disassemble it, aren't you?
I don't think the lay person understands how many parts it's possible to break a Bueno down into. Actually.
Yeah,
talk
I do.
Your Bueno.
Well, I'm going to break it off into sections.
Okay.
Then you're going to take off the bottom bit, aren't you? And then you're going to eat
sections
the centre.
First. Okay.
Well, I'd have a section. Yeah. Then eat the centre bit and then eat the chocolatey bits. That would be a way of doing it.
Okay, great.
I could eat it all at one, but I do think they are great. And the other one is, because I was literally eating them yesterday, and I do pretty much do this every time I eat them. You know the biscuits, and I will never remember the names of them. But you get them all the time. They're like a normal biscuit. They've got the chocolate laid over top and it's got a slight edge. I can't know what they're called.
Club?
No, like they're like, I've got them in the cupboard. Trying to look through my cupboard door. to give me the name. But you can see the biscuit at the top, at the bottom. They're flat.
Okay.
And it's like a butter biscuit, and then it's got the laid over chocolate bit on top.
Chocolibnitz.
Yes.
Yes.
I have to eat the chocolate bit round the edge before biting the main bit.
The edge has got to get devoured before the heart.
And so a little over the front tooth, and then
Yeah. I don't know if you live anywhere near a Lidl or if you've ever experienced a Lidl rip-off Choco Leibniz. I'm destroying the opportunity to ever be sponsored by Choco Leibniz. It's as good as.
I agree.
The other one that I think that Lidl have absolutely fucking nailed is an M&S Extremely Chocolatey, they're called, which is like a circular biscuit with hardly any biscuit and like a massive chocolate to biscuit.
I've not had that.
It's beautiful. And it's like an electric blue packet, and it's like where you get two or three in three or four troughs.
Oh, I feel like I do know them. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
And then I think M&S have seen what they've done there, probably what Lidl have done there, and gone, well, fuck you. Try and copy this. And now they've brought out an orange and mint variations on the original theme. Very clever. Very clever. I'm impressed.
Give the customers what they want.
Yeah, and I am the customers. I got a newish question. Where's your favourite place to get food from near to your home?
Well, I suppose one of my favourite restaurants is just around the corner.
Yeah.
Without giving away my address.
Yes, of course.
It's a restaurant called Amber, and they do... very, so it's kind of like an Ottolenghi vibe, but at a slightly nicer price.
Oh, great.
So it's just great. It's like some of the best hummus, lots of sharing plates, lots of that kind of like Lebanese inspired foods. And it's just, they do a really great brunch, lunch and dinner. You can always get a good, and they do a great cocktail. And so that is one of my...
Nice.
It's actually to the point where any friends or visitors we have say, please can we go to Amber? You rave about it so much.
Yeah.
But then my boyfriend and I look at each other and go like, we should go somewhere different. Like we should venture out a little bit because we have been here a lot recently.
Something
that I love it.
Lebanese food. I really am a big, big, big fan. And I think... I don't know. Do you live in London?
I do.
Yeah, me too. I feel really privileged to have access to this incredible food because I'm from Dorset on the south coast, and many a dear close friend, the same group of friends that I spoon Nutella in with from primary school, have moved back now. And the one thing they lament, they in every other way, they get to be like... kings of the castle because they're by the sea. They've all got homes that are bigger than our silly little London-y homes. They've got, everything's gorgeous and peaceful and idyllic and beautiful and scenic. But their takeaway game is still poor down there. It's pretty homogenous. I know one of them will drive upwards of an hour for sushi.
Like, wow.
Because it's so hot. But, sorry, planet. The one thing that, and my mum lives there still, and she, when she comes to stay, wants to go to there's a Lebanese takeaway in Catford called Feyrouz. That's extraordinary. Which a former guest told me is named after a Lebanese pop singer.
Oh, so,
that's interesting. But I think that's the first. It's my go-to place as well if I have visitors, especially if they're from the sticks. Be like, let's get Lebanese food because it's kind of familiar but also surprising. I think the bits that people have had falafel and hummus and stuff like that before and like really nicely marinated grilled meats if they eat meats or whatever, but there's I think the surprising bits are you can't beat like a fucking brilliant baba ganoush, like a really smoky, and then those like really smoky like aubergine-y, okra-y vegetable stewy things, and the like salty pickled sidey things, like the little pickly sidey bits. Like a radishy, I don't even know what they are, like yellow and purple and pink pickly bits. I'm into those as well.
Oh, I just love it all. And this restaurant, we ended up having to get our kitchen done, and that's how we discovered it. And we became like regulars because we couldn't cook at home. So we just went there, and they just opened, and we made friends with the owner. And so every time we go in, he's kind of always like, oh, you've got to try this new dish on the menu. Or, you know, try that. And there's so many great things. I mean, they've kind of got like a whole sort of influence of not just Lebanese, but amazing food. And everything's like seasoned to perfection. If it's got pomegranate seeds on, I'm there. You know, just like if it's just looks beautiful. Oh, I just love it.
I love it.
Scrumptious.
Yeah, but what would you sound like if you said it now in a big boy voice?
Scrumptious.
Yeah, pretty cool.
The sun gets COVID from the moon, and because no one thought to offer it a vaccine, it gets it real bad, and the Earth starts freezing up like a deadly real-life apocalypse version of the Eternal Winter from the Narnia books. Anyway, it's agreed to get better immediately, because that's how physical health works in this fantasy, sorry. Only if you... And weirdly, it does have to be you, Tally, agree to talk to a six-year-old about what happens in every episode of Series 3 of Art Ninja without ever turning away or phasing out or even using the toilet or having a snack break. And let me tell you, it takes hours and hours that feel like days and days. It's exhausting. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You go down in history as the woman who saved us all from a really chilly, but also at other times burningly hot apocalypse. And your reward in reality is the adulation of all people for all time. You've saved us all. Your reward in the moment, however, and bearing in mind you're flipping really hungry, because that was exhausting, that listening, is the feast of your dreams. Now, this is a fantasy situation. None of your answers need to be possible. Definitely don't care about I couldn't give a fuck about the ethics or health, like nutritional health or any of those things in your answers. The other thing to say is that I fully understand that this is your answer now. And were I to have asked you this even half an hour ago, 2 hours ago, in 10 minutes, it could be totally different. In this fantasy situation where you are the happiest and hungriest it's possible to be, what would you eat? What would you drink? And if there's a who, with, and where, you can have a who, with, and where.
Oh, do you know what? You know, like final meal questions are my worst questions, because I love so many things. But one of the things I will always go back to is a good lasagna. I actually prefer vegetarian lasagna.
Okay, great.
And it has to have a side salad, just your standard like tomato, cucumber, maybe a bit of avocado and just some leaves. It has to have salad cream, and it has to be salad cream. Don't want a dressing. I want the sugar and the salad cream, basically.
Combo
of the salad and the salad cream and the lasagna is
vegetable
just...
lasagna. Can you give me a bit more detail about the vegetable lasagna? What's the... is there a protein element, or is it just Mediterranean vegetables in there in a tomato sauce? Or do you go for a chunky green lentil? Or
could have lentils in it. If I'm not cooking, I could get, you know, like a Charlie Biggins one.
Yeah.
It'd be one of them. Okay. Because that is very good. Can highly recommend that. But very happy to do it just Mediterranean veg.
Yeah.
Obviously got a cheese sauce in there. So you've got a bit of protein.
Oh, of course you have. You've got your bechamel.
And you've got your cheese on top.
Lovely.
And I'm happy as Larry with that. And then if I was going to have a dessert, and this is I feel like this is an unpopular opinion, or so my friends have told me.
Okay. you did a really funny face.
I love a trifle, and like a good strawberry trifle. Don't want sherry in it, just want a nice strawberry trifle.
Yeah.
And I know it's not been long since it's been Christmas, so it's on my mind, because I only really get to eat it once a year.
I understand.
But that is one thing that I love that no one else seems to enjoy that much, and I can really go back and just really live off that for a while. So that is going to be probably my favourite dessert.
I love it. I love it. What a splendid answer. Mm. And would you have anything to drink? And is there a place and any company you'd like to be keeping for this fantasy?
Well, I think drink-wise, once again, not a fussy eater particularly, but a bit fussy about drinks. Not a big drinks fan, but I just have a glass of squash. I really love Robinson's do this orange and mango squash. I love it. I just love it. You can't beat it. It's nice and simple.
There's never not a bottle of that in my house. You'd be fine if you came round here.
Perfect.
Great.
And then who would I do it with? I'd probably say I do like my boyfriend, I have to say. We do get on very well.
It's good.
So I'd have to choose him. And where would we be? Somewhere hot. Let's go to the Maldives. Why not?
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. Nice choice. Oh, I am hankering for a hot trip to a hot place. What a great choice. Thank you for your wonderful answer. Thank you for all your wonderful answers. And for, I think I should thank you for some free therapy I feel like I've had, Tally. Thank you.
I've loved it.
What a dreamy guest. And as you can tell from my dithering and blithering on at her, I will be very much diagnosing myself as needing a listen to her podcast, Train Happy, and I recommend it generally to you too, please. Her Instagram is a place of real sanctuary and enlightenment. She is at Tally Rye, TallyRye on there. Get on that now, I'd say. I am. Come to see Hoovering live at the Leicester Comedy Festival on the 5th of February, where I'm also previewing on the 6th. Or come to a London early preview of my new show, Wench. All the most imminent ones are selling out, and they're all listed on my website, jessicafostercute.com. That's also where you'll find a link to email me if you've got anything longer than a tweet that you want to send me. But tweet me if you want, or Instagram me. Follow the podcast first, at the Hoovering Pod, and then follow me, at Jessica Fostercute. Feel free to support the podcast with lovely 5-star reviews, recommendations, or indeed with cold hard money over on Patreon. Links to everything interesting Tally and I mentioned in that podcast, as well as to all the things I've just blabbed on about to you, are as ever in the podcast notes. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.